The Good Liars.
The Good Liars.
This is boring.
We're boring.
I will die standing in my boots.
Herschel, I got you some condoms.
What made everyone so weird and sad that they had to come out here?
Oh, Mr. President, welcome to the show.
We are the Good Liars, and we are going to tell the truth. Trust us.
All right, we want to welcome to the show Sarah Cooper. I'm sure our audience knows her work. Sarah, you've written books, you had your own Netflix special, you starred along Jerry Seinfeld in the upcoming film called Unfrosted, but you came into a lot of our lives in 2020 when you started lip-syncing Donald Trump's pandemic misinformation.
The disinfectant, where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute, and is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning.
So Sarah, thank you for joining us. And I just have to say before we start, my dad is such a huge fan of you. How many times have you had that joke since the book came out?
Well, no one's really made it a joke. They say Like I just got coffee like 2 weeks ago and, you know, I was checking out and they were like, "You're Sarah Cooper." And I was like, "Yeah, my dad loves you." Like people just say it. They say it all the time.
There's a great story in the book of somebody who spent $15,000 to do a Zoom talk with you.
Yep.
It's 30 minutes long and then it's like a 15-year-old or something, or 17-year-old?
She was 20, yeah.
20, okay. Yeah.
And but then, she did not know who I was.
She had no idea. It
was like, her father my bought dad it for bought. Her. Yeah.
I was the perfect dismount from
pays
from
to that have those good dad fans, I guess.
I mean, I guess so. But it's so funny because today is actually the 4-year, literally to the day anniversary of that How To Medical video. Did you know that?
Wow. I did not, but what's funny is, so I was reading the book last night that I like got on YouTube this morning and Big Brother knew that either we were doing this interview, like it started feeding me your clips. And I was like, this is bizarre. But I guess if it's the 4-year anniversary, that does make sense.
Yeah.
But that's a great segue. Okay. So that's the first viral clip. You did this in your apartment. You spent a couple hours on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You put it out. You almost deleted the video.
Yeah.
And then you wake up and it's got 1 million views. Like what was going through your mind when you woke up and saw that?
Well, first of all, I think I forgot to say thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here.
Thanks for being here.
I don't know. I thought it was cool, but I'd gone viral with articles before. You know, I had 10 tricks to appear smart meetings was the first thing that went super viral in 2014, I think that was. And so I was like, oh, this is cool. I made something that people like. But I don't know. That was the most I thought about it. It was like, oh, cool. You know, something worked finally, because I think I'd been making stuff and we'd been in lockdown, so I couldn't do stand up. And I was just like trying to make something that, you know, would go viral, and it did. And so I thought that was cool, but I didn't think it was going to change my life. And I always think about that, how close I came to deleting that video and how like, you know, parallel lives, like that parallel path of like, if I had deleted it, how I'd still be married now. Like I'd still, like there's so many things that would not
deleting that video. Saved your marriage. Got it.
Yeah, it's like it's a wonderful life. There's a whole different timeline that could have happened there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that Donald Trump kept giving though. He kept doing these updates, these press conferences, and they were getting crazier and crazier. I know when I watched the How To Medical video, trying to figure out why like it was so captivating. Donald Trump is so clown-like and like so ridiculous. And seeing those words come out of someone else's mouth, like it was just incredible and made it feel all that much harder to believe that this was really the president who was really saying these things.
Yeah, he was begging for it. I mean, he just kept saying dumb shit. Can I say shit in here?
Whatever the heck you want.
Heck you want.
Gosh darn it.
You can say any old thing.
I mean, it's a little, when you think about it, how if either of you try to lip sync him, it wouldn't be as funny just because you're white men. You know what I mean? And it's a little when you think about it, how our society works is the fact that I'm a Black woman with those words coming out of my mouth. That's why it's funny. It's almost, you know, and the reason I started doing it, people are like, what made you do it? I was like, I'm jealous. Like, I want to be able to just say nothing and have people worship me and tell me how great I am and talk about how smart I am and how I'm a genius and all this stuff. And I never felt like I could. And then when I was lip syncing him, I was like, wow, he just takes his time and he just says the dumbest shit and everybody just loves him. And I'm just like, I was just jealous because I just feel like I could never do that.
The thing that I loved about the videos too was like you really embodied like the insecurity behind everything that he was saying too. Like he was, so there was a lot of like the egotistical, like I'm saying this is right, I'm right. But then later on, it was like kind of like the nervousness came in.
Yeah,
like,
a little pensive moment. Should I be what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially in that Bible video where he's like, they're asking him his favorite Bible verse and he just has no idea.
One or two of your most favored Bible verses are, well, and why?
I wouldn't want to get into it because to me, that's very personal. You know, when I talk about the Bible, it's very personal, so I don't want to get into
verse that means a lot to you that you think about or cite.
The Bible means a lot to me, but I don't want to get into specifics.
So if you had to boil down like the Donald Trump, obviously, you know, there's think pieces written about this impression, you know, and people are like, oh, you've embodied him. What is like the one word, and you don't have to leave it to one word. Like I said, this is not a gotcha interview here. if there's one word or a couple words just to describe Donald Trump, the inner workings, the emotion that kind of is the driving force in Donald Trump, what would that word be?
I think what word came to my mouth was circuitous for some reason, because
it's too big of a word for me to understand.
I'll explain it to you later.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It just always sounded like he was talking and then hearing himself and then responding to himself. It was like a loop within his own brain. You know, there's nothing really came in. It was like one thing would come in and then it would just go on loop inside. And you see it when he talks now. It's just like he's just repeating himself.
There's so few things actually said over the course of like an hour speech that he'll give.
Yeah.
Like you said, it back around and around. And he'll say it and then kind of like think about, what did that sound like when I said it? And then like,
right. Really different way again. Hey, that sounded pretty good. Let me say that again.
Do you think any part of him realizes that he doesn't know what he's talking about and he's happy to be getting away with it? Or is it fully, he's deluded himself into believing himself as much as other people believe?
I think he's completely deluded. And I think it's funny because a lot of the men who love my impressions are very similar to Donald Trump. And it's funny because it's like they, some of them don't realize that this is also making fun of them, you know?
I don't want to love them too much.
What? Yeah.
Now I don't want to love the impressions
too much. Right? Because I feel like
in the mirror.
Honestly, it's, you know, love my dad, but my dad is a lot like Trump. And this is why he triggered me so much. My ex-husband was gaslighty. My dad is gaslighty, you know? And so I think that's why he triggered me so much. And that's why men in tech triggered me, because it's just like, I just felt constantly gaslighted. And so, you know, the men who love the impression, a lot of them don't see themselves in it, or maybe they kind of do, but, I don't think Trump sees himself at all. And I don't think he lets anyone hold a mirror up to himself. Although sometimes I know that he saw my impressions, and sometimes I would love to know what he thought of them. Like if he thought I was actually paying an homage of some sort to him or something.
I bet he was. I mean, I think it's also like a thing with him where it's like, they're talking about me. That's great. Because it's great. And he like is like, I think kind of a glass half full type of guy when he thinks people are talking about him. Like he's like, they love me. How could you not love me?
You know, that's the other thing about him is he's a manifester, and like nobody talks about how the fact that he just says what he wants to think is true. And then it sometimes just comes true.
The Secret. Maybe he read The Secret. He was just like, I'm going to ask for a Diet Coke today. And now I'm going to ask for to be president.
He did not read anything, but maybe.
Testament guy or a New Testament guy?
Probably equal. I think it's just an incredible, the whole Bible is an incredible. I joke very much so. They always hold up The Art of the Deal. I say my second favorite book of all time.
you did this impression in 2020, and I just have to know personally, how long did it take for you to just be sick of doing this? Because it, you went from like 0 to 5 million as far as like as viral as you could possibly go, really.
Yeah.
And yeah. At what point were you like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this in this lip sync anymore.
It actually was, it was up until last year. I actually did, or was it earlier this year? No, it was last year, late last year. I think I made a few.
Okay. All right.
So, and then recently, you know, he had this Gettysburg thing that he said about Gettysburg.
Gettysburg, what an unbelievable battle that was, the Battle of Gettysburg. I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible and so beautiful in so many different ways. Gettysburg, wow.
And everybody was sending me that. And I was like, could I? And I, you know, I was just playing around with that on my own. And I was just like, I'm so bored. I'm so bored of this man. I don't care. I'm not interested. And at this point, I don't think it offers the same value that it did before of just like pointing out how ridiculous he sounds, because now people are supporting him. Even despite how ridiculous, they know he's an idiot and they're still supporting him. So like, I'm not pointing out anything that people don't already know.
Yeah. If after January 6th, people are like, he's still cool, no yeah. matter what. Like, it's like, all right, well then what can we do for
yeah.
it? So,
although I did say that I would love to be his running mate, because then I could just stand next to him and lip sync him live and then people
in real time.
And then people could look at him and be like, oh, we're fucked. But then they could look at me and be like, oh, but this is hysterical. And they could have the best of both worlds.
And then you'd win, though. That would be the problem. Trump would be president.
Yeah, yeah. But
yeah.
I don't know. I still think it would be fun.
I think you should do it. I think
people are bored enough that they would actually be like, sure, let's do it.
Jason, is that are we giving our endorsement right now?
Hell yeah.
I will endorse Sarah Cooper for VP. Of anybody, though. I'm going to say you could be anybody. Maybe it's RFK Jr. or Biden or Marianne Williamson or whoever
big
else.
I just love the idea of me debating Kamala Harris.
Wait, is it great. In Trump's voice, though? Is he standing nearby?
I don't know what I would
whatever
do.
Whatever comes to mind.
I don't know what I would do, but...
Or you just have a nice conversation.
Yeah, I would just be like, I'm such a fan. Like, I wouldn't even debate her. Like, I would just be like, no, actually, you should win.
It's so good to see you.
Yeah.
So now, thinking back to 2020, I just want to say this out loud for the listeners. 2020 was a terrible year, but for you, you had like a Hollywood story that I don't think people realize like how just crazy it was. You went from doing comedy at Two Boots Pizza, getting into a car accident, then creating these viral TikToks in your apartment, to having your own Netflix special, working with like comedy royalty, like the dream team of comedy, and you're hosting Jimmy Kimmel. This is all within like a 6-month period that this all happens. Like, what was going through your mind? Because this doesn't happen. Like I was trying to think back of like anybody that's had like just like that jump
yeah.
into like household name to special to hosting Kimmel and mm-hmm. I or any late night talk show or anything like that. And I just can't think of anybody.
Yeah.
So what was going through your mind during this?
I didn't really have time to think. You know, it was I'd been trying to get an agent, and then all of a sudden I had all 5 major agents wanted me. And then it was like, once I had an agent, it was like, you have a meeting with Natasha Lyonne, you have a meeting with Ben Stiller, it was just like Tina, it was like just over and over. And I was just like, okay. And I think my body was like, okay, we're doing this, but my mind couldn't catch up to what was actually happening. And so, you know, I wrote this in my book, like I get imposter syndrome just thinking about what happened, because I don't think I appreciated. I couldn't appreciate it because I just had to put one foot in front of the other and keep going. And yeah, I mean, I'm definitely I made an ass of myself in a lot of ways. That's why the third part of the book is called Humiliation, because I was like, I just had no idea the world. I was like, I always wanted to be here, but I didn't know exactly what it was going to be like. And I don't think I was at all prepared for what it was like, but I just tried my best, you know.
That's the way to do it, right? I mean, you gotta jump, and you said yes to everything, and you went with it, which is just like, even just saying yes and going on the ride is like, that's an achievement in and of itself. But to like have
things that came out great, like the special and then and hosting and now working on these huge movies. I mean, that's, it's an accomplishment. And I want to say, sorry to steamroll here. Sorry about that. I'm becoming the Donald Trump of this.
What kind of white man podcast is this?
I know.
Jason, what were you saying?
I was, yeah. Let me bring this back to me, which is actually what I'm going to do here. I do want to say, like, you came to the top here in 2020. You're like, everybody's talking about you. And a key part of people knowing who we are is actually when you shared some of our videos on Twitter in the middle of the pandemic. That was a snowball effect for us. So I wanted to thank you for the very little way that you helped us in a very big way by doing something very small.
So you owe me some money. I will take my 10%. No, you guys are so funny. So, I mean, that's not really hard thing to do. You guys are brave. I wouldn't want to talk to a lot of the people that you talk to. How are you seeing it now? The thing about 2020 is, especially the entire Trump presidency, is that I would wake up every day like everyone else, like, oh my God, what's he going to do today? And I just feel so exhausted by it now that I don't look at politics as much anymore. And I'm kind of trying to be more centered and, you know, do my meditation and breathing exercise, because I feel like all I have control over is just how sane I can be and how sane I can stay. And so I just don't understand people who are still as fervent, because it just seems like it takes so much energy to maintain that amount of intense engagement in something that's just at this point seems like just a circus to me.
I mean, you said it. We feel the same way, I think, to be honest.
And now we're 8 years into this person being involved in every day of our lives. And I think we are maybe more involved than I wish we were sometimes. But there are the people who are willfully every day waking up and cheerleading this, to your point. It just sounds exhausting. And what are you getting back after pouring all this into it for the better part of a decade? What are you getting back? So, I mean, speaking of that, what do you think is going to happen in the 2024 election? It's hard to believe it's only a few months away.
I feel like no one's even talking about it. Social media has made the cycle of news just so tiny. It's just I'm always refreshing my news. And if there isn't something new every a minute, I'm bored. And it's just, you know, no one can really operate like that. And so now it's just, we get bored of things so fast and we lose, I don't know, we lose focus. And I'm sure Biden's going to win. You know, I don't see any other option, but it's going to be the most boring win we've ever seen in our lives. We're just going to be great.
Do you think he's too young to be president?
He's too young, you said?
Yeah. Do you think he's too young to be president, Biden?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think you're speaking for a lot of people here who are they want to care about it, but the thought of going into another Trump election and and you talk about this in the book, how you just looking and doom scrolling in the morning and feeling so helpless about this guy who is in charge and somehow in charge of a global pandemic, but he's talking about disinfectants and it is a helpless feeling. So I don't blame you for being not engaged here. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. And I'm nervous. I'm nervous.
Are you nervous?
Yeah. I'm very nervous.
What are the polls saying?
They're swinging slightly in Biden's favor. But the other thing to be nervous about, regardless of polls and literally regardless of how people vote, is that one thing we can be sure of is that Trump will say that he won, whether he wins or not. I don't know what to expect, but I'm exhausted already.
Already exhausted. That's definitely the name of this one. But I just feel like it's, you know, January 6th was terrifying. I don't think he can do it again.
He's a manifester, though. This is what he does. He manifests.
I guess so. I don't know.
Someone read The Secret to him. You were saying there's no way he read it. Well, someone maybe read it aloud to him.
But I didn't know very many people in Washington. It wasn't my thing. I was from Manhattan, from New York. Now I know everybody.
So Unfrosted in 1963, Michigan business rivals Kellogg's and Post compete to create a cake that could change breakfast forever. I don't want to ask who wins. No spoilers, but still, my appreciation of the movie will be based on figuring that out. But are there any moments that like stood out to you? Any amazing moments working with all these incredible people that stood out to you working on the film?
Yeah, I mean, just time between takes was really, really special. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld is just like one of my heroes, one of the greatest comedians ever. And he's just like a legend. And, you know, to have him come over and sort of talk to me about how, you know, the setup of the scene is funny, so that once you have a funny setup, you will have a funny scene. You almost don't even have to write it. And that's something that I noticed watching Seinfeld, you know, like the episode where, you know, he's got a masseuse girlfriend, but he can't get the masseuse girlfriend to give him a massage. And then every scene with them is just him trying to get a massage and just heightening and heightening. It's just like you start out with something funny and then everything's sort of funny based on that. And like, that's kind of how the whole movie is set up. You know, you tell people that he made a whole movie about the Pop-Tart and people are already laughing. And every joke is just something, you know, off of that and this whole like parody of the space race. And he just put so many amazing people in it. I mean, you know, my first day on set was just like the call sheet was Jerry Seinfeld, Melissa McCarthy, Hugh Grant, and me. And I was like, what? You know, it's wow. Just like it didn't make sense. And then, of course, I get to set and I just have one line, but I can't even like say my line because I'm so nervous. I feel like somebody has like a chokehold on me and I just had no ability to like control my breath. And just like watching Hugh Grant like barely move his lips, but have this amazing tone in his voice, and Melissa McCarthy is the same. It's just like so fun to watch them work. And you just have such an appreciation for these performers who have been doing it for 20, 30 years. Jerry's been doing it for 40 years, 50 years maybe at this point. Like it's just so many talented people. And I think that's the thing of just like 2020 is just like I got put into this world that was so awesome. But in a lot of ways, I wasn't ready because I didn't really know. I couldn't really put a pin on what my taste was. You know, I couldn't really figure out, like, I didn't really know who I wanted to be in this world. I got into this world before I knew who I wanted to be in this world. And so, like, the last 4 years has been me sort of, like, figuring that out. But, like, getting lucky as hell to be in a movie with Seinfeld that takes place in the 60s and it's about cereal because they're my three favorite things in the whole world. And I just feel like, I can't believe my luck. I really can't. You know,
you feel like being put in those situations helped you, necessitated the ability to like figure out who you were and what you were and what your tastes were? I mean, could you have figured those things out without being kind of thrust into these situations?
I don't think so. I mean, it kind of sucks to have to be put into it, even with this book. Like, I feel ashamed to say that like I hadn't really read many memoirs before writing a memoir. And, you know, I wrote that memoir and now I'm like, I'm reading. I really love writing. So I've started reading a lot of books and I just feel like, oh, you know, if I had read more, like, you know, it would have been so much better and I would have been so much happier with like, I'm happy with how it turned out, but there's so many things that I know now that I wish I'd known before, but without having read it, I don't know if I would have learned those things. So it's kind of, it's a chicken and egg thing. You just like, you have to jump in and then you have to be like, oh, this is what it's like. And I can't thank Jerry enough because it's like, I didn't know how much fun and how beautiful it was to just have a dream and then see the dream turned into reality until I got onto that set. And I was just like, having just like a little tiny slice of that in my life is just had been amazing.
That's so cool.
I think that's interesting that you said you don't read a lot of memoirs. I read a lot of memoirs and I really appreciated how you structured it because it was different from a lot of them. So
thank you.
I thought that's interesting. And now you're reading a bunch of them.
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a bunch of novels because I want to write a novel next. And I realize how much I love writing. So that's, you know, and I would love to make a TV show, but I noticed that Hollywood is super into IP. They like really want something that's kind of a book or a one person show or a short story. And I know how to write books and short stories. TV shows are really complicated. Movies are really hard to write. I love writing dialogue, but I feel a lot more comfortable writing like stories. So I'm thinking about how I can take some of these show ideas I have and turn them into IP.
You're trying to create the egg so exactly. You can have the chicken.
Okay. Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. And anything you want to share on the ideas, or maybe like the cutting room floor ideas?
Yeah, I put in the book about how I sort of, you know, got this like schoolgirl crush on Jerry. And so I started writing a romantic comedy for us. It was basically about a, you know, legendary comedian who hires a writer to, you know, follow him on his tour in his private jet and write his biography, or his like book of like, you know, pearls of wisdom or whatever. And then they end up falling in love. So
that will never happen.
So
that's
there
one
you go.
We won't see. That's one you won't see.
Well, she can follow him to write the biography, and then it just turns into like a Fabio romance novel that she writes about the two of them together or something like that. Whoa. I'm just spitballing here. I'm just throwing stuff against the wall.
Wait a second. Okay. So it turns into the Fabio thing, and then that's what audience is seeing, and they think that they're seeing the real thing, but it's actually not. It's just in her head.
Okay.
Wow. And then act three, it's back in the real world and they have to actually fall in love.
No, he's like, no. This is shit. Why did you write this? This has nothing to do with my
life. You're fired. You're fired. End credits. Great. Yeah. Okay, that's great. I want my 10% of that. So
you can have 50%, cool. Jason.
Hey.
Whoa. Right. I'm left with, I'm just giving up 10% as it stands right now, it sounds like, based on our earlier negotiations. you talked about in your book that you discovered weed more recently.
I did.
How's that going for you? As someone who can't do it. It just never goes great for me. I'm curious as to how you like.
What doesn't go great?
I'll just get very worried. I'll be like, oh man, my parents are getting older. That sucks. Like, I'll turn off my phone. Like, I sure hope no one calls. Like, is this the person I want to be?
Paranoia.
Sounds like a good thing, the turning off your phone at least.
I mean, not because I'm hoping to not have to interact with anyone in my life. So that's my experience. But you seem like you kind of have like superpowers where you can like see subtext.
I see things, but it has been, you know, I joke about the fact that I'm Jamaican, but I just discovered weed at like age 42 and, you know, love sativa because I feel very creative. And, you know, I write in the book, like how I can hear things, I see things like but for a while I thought, oh, who I am when I'm high is who I am. Like, that's me. That's the real me. And it's not. It's not. It took me a year to realize, oh, that's not me. That's a version of me that needs to be heavily thought about and analyzed. And then, you know, from a sober place. And so now, you know, I'm kind of on like a, you know, once or twice a month kind of like, you know, thing, because I just... It's something that I love to use in terms of creativity, but I don't want to like depend on it. But also, I'm a heavy editor when I write. Like, I'm always like, I'll write a sentence and then I'll just rewrite that sentence for an hour. And when I'm high, I just write. And I don't edit at all. And that's kind of what you need to do at the beginning of a project. You need to not judge anything that you're doing. And so it's helped me in that sense, but I do need to step away from it in order to actually make sense of what I wrote.
So now it's two times a month. So are you enjoying now in New York, like just here in Brooklyn, there's just like a new weed shop. It feels like every week or two, there's like a new one opening up.
I get all my weed in LA though. It's, you got to go to LA.
All right. So that's my next chapter, going to LA.
Yeah.
Experimenting with weed.
Yeah. Okay,
now is the time in our life where we need to go to LA just to have weed. DeVron, that's the next stop for the Good Liars.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to politics to get into weed.
Do you get high, Jason?
I don't know the last time I smoked weed, to be honest. But I in college and my 20s, I was smoking a fair amount. But like I mean, it's been in the last year, but it's not. And I have some weed here that is just sitting there and is probably so dry at this point that I've never like... I gotta like smoke some weed now. But I do like the thought of like going to see a movie, something like that, where like you could, you know, you're seeing things in a different way.
Oh God, it's the best.
I feel like I have to be a little active with it.
You like it in theory. But so far, you're just staring at the weed getting drier.
I see a lot of movies by myself. I feel like
I
that's
do too.
The way. I wonder, and I'm seeing them like midday. Are you doing the?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Then we should coordinate this because
we
I
should
like,
coordinate and sit absolutely on other ends of
I don't
the theater.
Sit, no, I don't.
We yeah, can, like, exactly. You're both and high, just wandering.
That's a perfect place to get high before because like you could just be like, you know what? I'm gonna have a milkshake now,
oh,
and actually, I'm gonna have some chicken fingers. And
it's best. I can't recommend it enough. I saw the last Wes Anderson film, High.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So good. I saw Oppenheimer, High. I saw Barbie,
Ooh,
High. I saw so many. The movie I tried to see High was Nope, and I had to walk out within the first 5 minutes. I was like, Nope, I cannot do this. I have to come back when I'm sober because this is way too intense. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was. I wouldn't recommend it. Even yeah, like Oppenheimer, I couldn't do it for Oppenheimer either. It's too much. It's too much.
Pussy.
For me, but I guess by the time you get to the
do
bomb
it.
Part,
do
you're
it.
Gonna, it's
do
3 hours
it.
In, you're like going to be stone cold sober at that point anyway.
Yeah.
So,
but they didn't even show, I mean, they showed the bomb, but they didn't show the destruction. They just went straight to a courtroom scene.
I didn't understand that. Why spend the end of that movie being like, will he or won't he get his clearance revoked? Like it was such a big important thing, and it was boiled down to this like these boring courtroom scenes.
Yeah And it's really interesting how, like, you know, Oppenheimer, and also this was Killers of the Flower Moon, like it's like these men weren't great, but yet they are the heroes in these. It feels like they're the protagonists, they're the people you're supposed to identify with, and I don't know, it was hard.
Did some bad things. The guys, some of the guys did.
Some of the guys did, yeah.
That's my takeaway there.
You were high. You were high.
So you're on the Today Show. I'm high right now.
We're all high. High. Yeah.
I'm high on life.
Oh shit! How do you do that?
We're watching. I told Rob this. We did a podcast, and I told a story about ghost story that I have that I've told people, and like the end of the story is that I was really high, and my mom listens to our podcast.
Oh.
And did I say our mom? My mom listens. We're not brothers, Ram and I. And she listened to the podcast and she was like, I didn't know you were high. And now she's going to listen to this and hear me commenting on
also,
it.
Also, that's the worst ending for a really long ghost story. It's like, because you're describing things that you really saw and really felt. And it's like, but you should know that it was definitely because I had smoked way too much weed.
Yeah.
Yes, that's why I saw the ghost. That's why I saw the ghost. But anyway, so you were just on the Today Show, and you said something about Jerry Seinfeld. And do you remember what you said on the Today Show?
Have I been rethinking everything I said on the Today Show for the past 24 hours?
Okay,
yes,
okay.
I have. Yes,
it was
I
fed
have.
To me, and maybe because you were tagged on Instagram. We don't have to talk about it if you don't want
to. It's totally fine. I just, you know, those shows are not hard to do. What's hard for me is like afterward and rethinking every single, especially when it's a live show. And I have not told anyone this yet because it just happened, but I literally came home crying. I was crying to my doorman. Like, I just was like, what did I say? Like, I was just like, I think I did the worst show. I had to call my mom. I had to call my sister-in-law. I was just like freaking out. And
I thought you did a great job.
Thank you. I watched it. I was like, this is fine. But like, even this morning I woke up in the middle of the night, like, why didn't I say this? Why didn't I say that? And I just, that's the thing about this business. That's just like, it triggers my ego. Like it triggers my like, oh, this could have been better. Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do this? And it's a really hard thing to get a hold on. So yeah, go ask me about it.
Yeah.
Trigger me some more.
No, I'm not going to do it now. Now I feel really self-conscious about it.
Now you have to.
No. Okay. Well, you said, and I'm just quoting you. I'm doing a quote. Jerry Seinfeld could get it.
On set, and I was like, you know, Jerry could get it. Jerry Seinfeld could get it. And they were like, Sarah, you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. And then 3 months later, the Kith campaign came out.
Oh, yeah.
And they were texting me like, Jerry could get it. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I said.
I always said that.
Get what?
I'm not going to explain that to you if your mom listens.
Okay. Mom, turn off the show now. All right. Well, that was thanks for coming on, Sarah.
Thanks for having me. Hi, Jason's mom.
If there's anything else you want to plug, plug away. Plug, plug, plug.
No, just the movie streaming on Netflix, May 3rd. I've seen it 9 times. I don't want to blow it up too much, but I do think it's incredibly good. And I'm incredibly proud to have been a part of it because it's just one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. And I can't stop watching it. So I hope everybody enjoys it.
America. Before we go, I ask this to DeVram every episode. Any words of wisdom that you have for the audience?
If you are someone who knows a single man, I am looking.
There you have it.
So full of wisdom. I'm gonna write that down. I'm gonna use that every day.
I've been told that if I'm not on the apps, which I'm not, that I need to use my network. And you guys are now in my network. And if you want to be part of the Sarah Cooper is Looking for Love cinematic universe, then you can be a part of it.
There you have it.
Follow Sarah on Instagram. Her DMs are open. I don't know. I'm not even sure.
You don't even know what DMs are.
I don't.
How old are you, Jason?
I'll be 30. No, 23 next year. This year. 23 this year.
There's no way.
That's what I tell people, so I don't know. I mean,
you're 23?
I'm 22 now. I'll be 23 on November of this year. And DeVram is 58.
Are you sure?
That does it for this episode of Good Liars Tell the Truth. Sarah Cooper, thanks for joining us. We'll see you all next time.
America.
The Good Liars Tell the Truth is produced by Aaron Mason with video editing by Kevin D'Angelo. New episodes premiere every Tuesday with bonus episodes only available on Hero Hero. That's herohero.co/thegoodliars. If you have any questions or comments, email us at thegoodliarspodcast@gmail.com.